As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. So, in light of everything happening, we're going to hit pause on our current season and instead resurface an episode that was really important to us that we did about 2 years ago on inequality in tech, where we interviewed Everett Taylor about his experiences, especially on LinkedIn and being racially profiled there, Sadi Musafar about pay inequality, Arlen Hamilton about why she does the work that she's doing today, the incredible work. We felt like these were important stories to tell to our community here. When we first released this episode, it was right after the Unite the Right rally, where Heather Heyer was murdered by a white supremacist. And so we'd recorded these under the This New Economy moniker. And these episodes weren't available currently on the Rocketship feed. So we wanted to make sure that we had this content available and that will live on in this feed, because this was some of the most, I feel, important and impactful work that we've done on this show. And so we'll bring it to you here today. Hope you enjoy. Budget cutbacks, but increased police presence. Black man, that ain't the right hand of justice. To tell the truth, man, I'm fucking disgusted.
And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
I had someone recently tell me that he didn't feel that, he felt that women were treated equally in America. And I just wondered what country he was in.
On the other side, when you want people to give you an opportunity, and because you don't have this certain background, you don't have this certain education, you haven't worked at these certain companies, right? Your name might be spelled a little bit differently.
So diversity in tech, this has been an episode I've really wanted to tackle for a while, but also an episode I've been really nervous about tackling.
Okay, why have you been nervous about it?
Yeah, well, you know, we're two white guys.
We are.
And I just felt like we might get it wrong, you know, and this wasn't something that I wanted to get wrong.
Yeah, well, I totally hear you there. And actually, I have been feeling sort of the same in that I thought that this is actually, in my opinion, this might be the most important episode that we do. Yes, we are two white guys, but, you know, we're talking about issues that you and I, maybe we haven't had to deal with, but our friends have, our family members have in some cases. In fact, I know, I mean, you probably have very special reasons for wanting to do this episode.
Yeah. So my family is mixed. My wife is Black. My kids are mixed. And, you know, when I look at some of the things that are happening out there and the stories that we hear, I can see them in that. And I worry that they're going to go out into the workplace or into college or into the world, and they're going to be faced with these issues that I've never had to face. If we can even make a scratch in the surface of bringing, I guess, awareness to these issues, then I feel like I've done a little something as a parent, right? And all we want to do is try to make the world a better place for our kids.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, as I've been trying to think about this more, I mean, because I had the same sort of struggle that you had mentioned before, where it's like, well, this is an important one, but man, I'm a white male in technology. Like, there's a lot of people that are like me. Should I be the one that's, you know, helping move this type of conversation along? Even though I'm going to be at the, you know, very bottom of the totem pole here in terms of, you know, being able to really, you know, have deep experience about understanding what it is that other folks have had to go through that me as a white male, I haven't. I still feel like this is an awesome conversation that I want to be a part of and play at least, I don't know, a really small role in.
Yeah. And we've tried to bring those stories today. So we've talked to Everett Taylor and Arlen Hamilton and the diversity team at Stripe. And hopefully by bringing some of those experiences and stories and maybe even some solutions of what people are trying, that we can help maybe move the needle or bring awareness or maybe inspire someone to try something at their company.
I am really looking forward to this episode, so I can't wait to just get right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Welcome to Rocketship.fm.
Rocketship FM is produced in partnership with Product Collective.
We're your hosts, Michael Sacca
and Mike Belsito.
So we know diversity can be a difficult issue to discuss, but the truth is the tech industry has a problem. And I know when we were doing some research into this, Mike, you found some interesting data by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, this data that they had put together, it actually, there are some really interesting things that you could read from it. I mean, there are huge racial disparities in the tech workforce compared to the private sector overall. And I mean, the data points right to that.
And I found similar data from the Open Mic. They reviewed the data from some of the biggest tech firms, and they saw a consistent pattern, which was overwhelming, disproportionate percentages of white male employees. And then at the executive and upper management, it was even worse. Blacks, Latinos, and Native Americans are all underrepresented in tech by nearly 16 to 18% compared to their presence in the US labor workforce overall.
Yeah, and tech companies, they should be concerned about this, and their investors should be concerned too. I know investors like to, you know, think about the bottom line, but the evidence actually suggests that a racially diverse tech sector, it actually could translate into stronger financial performance. There's this report that McKinsey did on diversity, and it showed that there's this correlation between racial and ethnic diversity in a company's financial performance. It was for every 10% of an increase in racial and ethnic diversity on the senior executive team, there's actually a full percentage point that the gross earnings actually rose by.
Why is it so hard for companies like Apple and Microsoft to build a workforce that better represents the customers that they're actually selling to? Right? And this brings us to our first story, where we talked with Everett Taylor. He's the National Brand Ambassador for NASA's Startup Initiative. He's the head of marketing at Los Angeles-based startup Skirt. He's young, he's accomplished, and he's Black. And when he was 19, he discovered this amazing tool called LinkedIn.
Come back home to Richmond, and I hear about this thing called LinkedIn, and I'm like, whoa, this is way better than classified ads. I need to get on this. And I was pretty confident, right? I was like, you know, I'm 19, but I've had 4 years of experience, because I had 3 years of experience at Eastern National and then 1 year of experience at United Way during my first year of college as a marketing coordinator, right? And so I'm applying to pretty entry-level things and I'm not getting any responses. And, you know, me naturally as a marketer, you know, I want to A-B test this. Like, I'm like, what's going on? Why isn't anyone giving me a shot? So I can't come up with any solutions. And then I started thinking about it. I was like, is it because I'm Black? And you know, you never want to be that guy, right? You never want to, you know, make it about race. You know, like, you know, you have some people that's the first thing they jump at. I always try to look at myself first before putting it on the color of my skin, right?
I think I might be able to see where this is. So I bet he did he experiment and try to change the picture that he had for himself on LinkedIn to see if that made a difference?
Yeah, he sets up a fake profile with essentially the same resume that he has, and he puts a white guy, changes the name.
It was like something like, I don't know, Bradley or something. I don't know.
And applies to the exact same jobs.
And 7 out of those 10 companies responded back with interest. 10 companies that didn't even respond back to me. And so that really was the point that really pushed me to the point of wanting to be an entrepreneur.
That is so messed up.
Right?
Yeah.
And at that point, he deleted LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And he has never set up an account again.
Yeah. That's awful.
So right there, you know, we start to see the problem staring us in the face, right? And as a young 19-year-old kid, I mean, Everett kind of has this like never going to give up attitude, but not everyone is Everett.
Right. Well, and that it is a perfect sort of rebuttal to, you know, sometimes people will try to say, oh, no, I mean, the best person gets the job, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with anything else. But in that situation, it's like the exact same background. I mean, everything else was exactly the same except name and photo, and it just proves that it's not necessarily what it's all about.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. When Rainn Wilson realized he had a special gift for talking people to sleep, he had two choices: construct a massive speaker that would blast his voice to every person in the country, or invent a talking pillow. AT&T Business eventually talked him into the pillow thing. And backed by a reliable network, the only network with built-in security controls, Sleep with Rainn was a hit. Take your ideas to the moon and beyond at business.att.com. That's business.att.com. This episode is brought to you by Yahoo Finance. Wouldn't it be great if you could see all of your investment and retirement accounts in one place? With Yahoo Finance, you can consolidate your views with multiple accounts into one hub and access the expert analysis you need to tend to your entire portfolio with confidence. Honestly, this has been a lifesaver for me. I've used Yahoo Finance to consolidate all of my various 401k and investment accounts so I can see everything all in one place. And it makes it incredibly easy to manage. So if you're struggling with that, check out Yahoo Finance. For over 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. You can securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart a great investor, and that's how Yahoo Finance ensures that you have the insights to look at your wealth in its entirety. So go to yahoofinance.com That's yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
Now back to the show.
We also talked to somebody else, Sadia Musafar. She's a Canadian-based entrepreneur. And there was a point in time where she confided in one of her coworkers what her salary was. And she figured out she was actually making 40% less than her male counterparts. Same roles, you know, same, you know, general experience, but 40% less in terms of salary.
Earlier on in my career, I was working in a great, large, multinational company. And I had realized that a lot of the guidance that I was getting around progress and advancement and professional development wasn't really translating into a career progression for me. And I was frustrated, but I wasn't getting the kind of feedback that I needed to give them what they needed to see in order to, you know, give me a raise and a promotion. And because this was early on in my career, I was relying on things like, you know, your one-on-ones and your professional development stuff and HR. And out of sheer frustration, one day I was sitting with one of my friends who happened to be a dude, and I just said, here's how much I'm making. And I know that this is not enough, but I have no way to know what it should be. And as soon as I said that, he just looked at me like, whoa, that is like a lot less than. And then he named two people who were doing exactly what I was doing. One of them had been around just as long as I had, but one of them had joined later. So I had seniority over them and I was making less money than them.
So now, armed with this information, Sadia went to her boss to see how they can make it right.
I didn't name any names. I said, I've come across this information and I think this is unfair and I need to know how this will be corrected. And the response I was given was mostly around, well, this just happens to be in the middle of the year and we don't, you know, make any changes in the middle of the fiscal. So we will review this, not correct this, but review this at the end of the year. And what was frustrating for me was zero acknowledgement of what I had actually found, which was an unfair pay ladder. And no logical explanation of why I was on it other than, you know, that I didn't know any better and that I was a woman. At that time, I hadn't known as much about, you know, sexism that is rampant in our sector, but it felt very targeted and very unfair because all the other information that I had found, there was nothing else that was different other than gender.
And ultimately, she ended up quitting.
So frustrating.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something that, again, as a female, there are this type of thing. This isn't like a one-off. Like, this happens over and over and over again. And it's something I've never had to deal with. But in this case, this is something that Sadia and women like Sadia have to deal with all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So we dove deeper into the data. And Uber recently released their internal diversity report because they came under fire. And they found that of its 12,000 employees, only 8% were Black.
And they're not alone. I mean, Uber's competitor Lyft, they had their own report and found that 18% of its tech and engineering teams were women and only 1% of its leadership team was Black.
So even at Google, they recently came under fire when one of their male employees was circulating an anti-diversity manifesto.
A memo criticizing Google's push for more diversity is causing, well, a controversy would be an understatement here.
Yeah, that is the understatement. Teresa Carrasco joins us now with more on that. Of course, some other headlines making news this morning. Good morning, Trace.
Good morning, ladies. Yes, a memo written by an unnamed senior software engineer at Google has now gone viral. The memo suggests Google has fewer female engineers because men are better suited for the job. In the memo published by Gizmodo, the Google employees said the company also initiatives of the company to increase diversity discriminate against some employees, and that a liberal bias among executives and many employees makes it.
So why do companies fail to build a diverse workforce?
Culture starts from the top, man. Culture absolutely starts at the top and what people care about at the top. It's totally a reflection of that, right? And so at these companies, if the CEOs, if the executives, if the boards, if these people actually care about diversity, they will make it happen. If that's really a priority, they will make it happen.
And in Silicon Valley, the recruiting pools, which were established years ago, I mean, they're still really largely just white males from Stanford and Cal Berkeley.
Yeah. And if you have, you know, white executives and you have a pool that is largely white, most likely, and studies show that they are going to recruit people that look like them, either on paper or physically. And so this just perpetuates the problem because we don't have anyone at the top who's pulling up people of underrepresented backgrounds.
Recruiting from Stanford and Cal Berkeley and like these places that are only in these certain cities and areas at schools that are, you know, literally have like 1% black people or 2% black people or Latino or whatever it is, right? Then that's what you're going to get. You know, that's what you're going to get. You have to fix that pipeline problem. You have to go out there and really start talking to people that come from different places, different cities, different schools. I mean, that's where a lot of this starts. You know, there's some really, really brilliant people out there.
And now can't people apply directly to these companies, right? So like you don't have to go to Stanford or Cal Berkeley, right?
Have you ever really tried applying to a Facebook? Let me tell you how this shit is, Michael. So I've had people who are absolutely brilliant, right? And I actually talked to this one founder. He happened to be a white male, but this is actually very, very true to Facebook. You apply to Facebook without any recommendations or anybody that you have connected there, more than likely you are going to get turned down or never get into the pipeline. They'll just send you an automated message and say, hey, sorry, you're not what we're looking for. Thank you for applying, right? And who are the people with those connections in these companies? People that look like the people that are in the companies, right? It's really, really tough to crack through when if you just try to apply as a regular person with no connections into that company. I don't care if you're white, black, Spanish, or whoever, it's already that difficult, right? And it's even that harder when you're someone who's a diverse candidate that may not have the same connections as someone else.
Things like access, connections, your personal network, these are largely social constructs that could be actually really difficult to fix. So Google, for instance, teams are encouraged to pull from their personal network when hiring key employees. But if their personal networks are largely white and oftentimes male, well, then they're simply persisting the problem rather than actually fixing it.
Just like, you know, from the hiring pools, right? If we're largely hiring from Stanford and Cal Berkeley, if our personal networks match those, that isn't a better solution to the problem.
At Stripe, which is an online payment processor, they realized they had a problem. They realized that their pipeline for new hires wasn't diverse enough, and they were losing out on this whole segment of the talent pool simply because through their hiring process, they're actually preventing underrepresented segments from getting through. Christina Cordova, who leads Stripe's partnerships team, she saw this and she took it on as a personal mission to fix it with inside the company.
So about, I would say, a year and a half ago, you know, I was very passionate about diversity and inclusion internally at Stripe, and I actually got the company to launch its first inclusion survey. So this was specifically a survey asking for understanding the representation of various different backgrounds of employees at Stripe. So gender, race, ethnicity, et cetera. And then also asking questions about how those employees feel in terms of inclusion, whether or not they feel like they belong at Stripe, whether they feel like they're getting resources to make them successful here.
The conclusion of this story, along with our interview with Arlen Hamilton, are available in part 2, already in the feed.
Thank you so much for listening to Rocketship.fm. It's your support that keeps the show going. Rocketship.fm is now part of the Podglomerate Network. If you want to learn more about the other shows on the Podglomerate Network, go to thepodglomerate.com.
Rocketship.fm is produced in partnership with Product Collective, a community for product people. If you go to productcollective.com, you could check out live video interviews, sign up for our newsletter, be a part of our Slack group with over 6,000 product people. Just check it out at productcollective.com.